we're back on the Andy Finn Show, and we're talking about Ruth Finn, who died 25 years ago today. And another story that I remember about my mom and her frugalness that got her into, oh, a small bit of trouble, but a great family story, and a story I tell every time I go to a funeral, it seems, and that is that Mom used to want to save money on long distance. Now, back in the 50s and 60s, long distance was expensive, and so it was seemed like a huge expense to make a long distance call, and so you didn't do a lot of it the way we would today, the way we have for 20 or 25 years. And so what Mom would have you do, if you got, once we got old enough to go on a trip, whether you flew somewhere, or more likely you drove somewhere, like Buffalo or even New York City, wherever you went, when you got there, she wanted to know you arrived okay. So she said, make a person-to-person call back home here and go for, make a person-to-person call to yourself. And then when we get it, we'll know you arrived safely and we'll say, honestly, he's not here. And then you hang up, they don't get charged for the call, but we know you arrived safely. So that's how my mom operated.
Huh.
And this one day, my aunt died. She stayed with us the last years of her life, or the last few months of my life, my mother's sister, Aunt Ann. When Aunt Ann died, as we were preparing for the funeral, my cousin Johnny was also living with us at the time. He was just out of school. And he needed to get his black suit. His mother was coming up from Silver Spring, Maryland, for the funeral, mother and father. And he said, Aunt Ruth, I got to call Mom and have her bring my black suit up. And my mother says, no, no, don't call her and don't waste the money on a long-distance call. Just make a person-to-person call for Johnny Black Suit. And she'll say he's not there, but she'll think about it and she'll remember and she'll bring the suit up. So he says, well, that sounds clever. We'll do that. So he calls. He calls for Johnny Blacksuit, hangs up, and his mother and father get up there for the funeral. And Johnny says, Mom, how you doing? Good. Well, do you have my black suit? And she said, what? I don't have your black suit. He said, but I called. And she said, oh, is that what that was about? She said, I was getting out of the bathtub when the phone rang. I had to get out of the bath. And I ran to the phone, and the operator says, person to person for Johnny Blacksuit. And I'm thinking, there's no Johnny Blacksuit here. And it seemed like a weird name. So she didn't think anything more of it. And she did not bring the suit. And Johnny did not have his black suit for the funeral. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, that plan to call person to person for the person who wasn't there worked pretty good most of the time. But not that time. My mother was also very practical. And, you know, we all worked around the house from the time we were little. Judy had mentioned before when there was cleaning to be done, as little as 3 years old, you'd be given, for a spick and span party, you'd be given a bucket of water, soapy water, and a rag. And you weren't expected to do that much, but you were expected to clean the dirty fingerprint marks off the doorways, you know, at your level, down at your height, to teach you that everybody pitches in and everybody does a little bit of work. And so when, as you got older, you took on more responsibility. And I had two kinds of jobs when I was young. About age of 8, I could go up to the gas station. And of course, it didn't feel like work at this point. It felt like play. But I could go up with my dad in the evenings. He worked like 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. with time off for lunch and dinner. And I'd go up with him on Friday evenings because I didn't have to go to school on Saturdays. Even at age 8, I could go up with him at 6 p.m. when he went back to work and stay with him until 10, and I could pump gas. And you get a little Texaco shirt. It was cool. And I also worked on the farm. When you're real little, you can pick strawberries. And then once you're age 14 and can get a work permit, you can work by the hour for the farmer, for Joe. And we'd do everything from hoeing cabbage and strawberries to weeding carrots to baling hay and picking up straw and all of it. And so I earned a lot of money that way, as I say. And boy, you were taught that in a family of eight, you got to pull your own weight. And we had out in the barn areas, we raised, my brother Tim raised chickens, and we had rabbits, and we always had other kinds of animals around. And, you know, we chickens, you raise them for the eggs, and every so often when you want dinner, you cut one of their heads off and put it in hot boiling water and pluck it and gut it and have it for dinner. So we did our share of work. But the other thing I want to talk about is mom's gift for the joy of life. One of the things she imparted to us kids is how great life is and how much there is to like about it and enjoy about it. She never saw life as a chore. She was always willing to crack a joke. She was always in a good mood. I can't remember her. I mean, she very rarely would get cross with us, or even when she was worked hard and a little harried, she just didn't let that stuff change her outlook, that life was pretty sweet all the way around. And so there are a number of stories that I could share about this. I can remember the Mom organized two picnics every summer. There was a 4th of July picnic, and there was the family reunion picnic. And they were about 3 weeks apart, usually. And there'd be, some of the same people would be at both, but there'd be about, probably 70 people there for the family reunion, and then over 100 for the 4th of July picnic. And she would order, 20 cases of Coca-Cola some years when there were a lot of people, and a keg of beer. And everybody brought a dish to pass kind of a thing. That was kind of the very early days of these potluck dinners. I don't say my mother started potlucks, but for all I know, she might have. But we'd have these large picnics all day long, and we had a ball diamond. The farmer, Joe, would leave a quarter acre in front of the barn fallow every year and not farm it and let it grow to grass, and he'd come up and cut it for us beforehand. And many years I would put lime down and put bases out there, so we had an official ball diamond to play softball on, and there were horseshoe pits so that the adults could play horseshoes, and we had a blast. But one of these years, one of my second cousins, or distant cousins, I guess I'll say, not second cousins, a distant cousin, was over, and all I remember, his name is Kenny. I don't even remember who his parents were, but Mom knew that we were getting along well. I didn't see much of Kenny, and I hadn't seen him much, but we were good friends that day. And she said, "Hey, would you like to have Kenny stay over night?" And I said, "Yeah, that'd be great. Should we ask his mom?" And she said, "Just go upstairs and get your pajamas on and give Kenny a pair of pajamas. So, and then come down." And so I said, "Okay," I just trusted her, you know. So we go up, we get in our pajamas, we come down, and she told us to say goodnight. And so we came down and we said goodnight to Kenny's mother. Mm-hmm. And then Mom talked her into letting him stay overnight and said, "I'll bring him back to the city tomorrow." And that was just her way of, I mean, I think she thought that if she asked her mother directly, she might say no. But by having us do this, it was a done deal. And that was just kind of her impishness and her willingness to be playful. And one of the best stories is the story of the electric fork. And I, rather than tell this myself, I was talking with my brother Dan about this on the phone. And so let's listen to what we recorded just a little bit earlier about the story of the electric fork.
I remember she got a kick out of a Christmas present from Stan when one Christmas he gave her an electric fork.
Oh, right. So do you remember any more about that?
Well, no, he had taken an old classic, I picture the fork, it's a sort of a fork for a carving fork.
That's a carving fork, that's right. It had a
heavy black handle.
That's correct. And a swing arm on it that allows you to stand it up so it doesn't touch the table, I guess.
I guess you got more of it than I got, yeah.
And Stan took he was an electrical kind of guy, so he took a plug and glued it in the end. And of course, this was like, I suppose this would be 1964. It was 1964, and I'll tell you why in a minute. And it was the year after the electric knife came out. It was 1963, yeah. The electric knife was one of the most popular gifts for Christmas. And so Stan had this idea of an electric fork, and Mom thought it was hilarious, and so did everybody. Well, the reason I remember it was 64, and I may have told you this story, Dan, was that the next semester, I was a freshman at St. Andrews, and my freshman English teacher was Father Hochter, who you know well, later to be Dr. Hochter. And Father Hochter gave us an assignment in English class that January, a month after this. We had to give speeches, and the first speech was to sell something. Well, Mike Meyer sold Ski-Doos because they were the latest thing, and not many people had snowmobiles at that time, and other people sold cars. Well, I got up and sold the electric fork. And Father Hochter just sat in the back and just could barely contain himself because most of the kids were, you know, they're 14 years old. They didn't know it was a spoof. And he thought so highly of me, he entered me in a speech contest.
Really?
With the young, he invited two of us, Dick Marone and myself, to go to the Young Optimist Club and speak on their topic that year, which was optimism, youth's greatest asset. I was scared to death. My knees were shaken. I almost didn't get through the speech. Needless to say, I didn't win. Dick Marone won. But Father Hochter thought that I was just brilliant as a 14-year-old, and I owe it all to Mom.
Who was it to Stan?
Well, yeah, that's right, but I think Mom probably suggested I sell the electric fork.
Yeah, that was a wonderful idea.
Well, I have the electric fork, and it's hanging from a hook in my kitchen.
Well, I wondered who inherited it.
Well, Judy had it, of course. It went back to Judy after Mom and Dad passed away. And I was out there one year. And you know how this is. You walk into somebody's brother's or sister's house and you say, hey, I didn't know you got the... Judy had the big blue smoky ashtray, we call it. But it's a candy dish, I suppose, that Uncle Gordon gave the family one year. And she had the electric fork. And when I told her the story about Father Hochter in the speech, she said, well, this has been stuck in my drawer. I haven't taken it out in 10 years. You should have it. So I said, I'll take it.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, I remember well the electric fork. Well, and when we come back, I want to tell you guys a couple more stories. One about the swimming pool that Mom put in. She managed to do it on a low budget. And secondly, our first snowmobile, because Mom was an innovator and we had a snowmobile before most people knew what they were.